Good morning. It's the 36th day of the second session of the 29th legislature. The House and Senate say they're making progress at putting together a state budget, which will no doubt include another round of steep cuts. How to pay for state spending this next fiscal year and in the future is likely to dominate the political conversations over the next 2 months. Should Alaska tap into its permanent fund or the earnings of the fund that the fund accrues? Should Alaskans still get dividend checks when the state is facing a $3.5 to $4 billion deficit? Then there are the taxes, from gasoline to fisheries to an income tax. Lawmakers in Juneau are crafting out the future of the size and scope of Alaska's government and how, as a state, we'll pay for it. The phone lines are open, and here to take your comments, questions, and to hear your concerns is Representative Bryce Edgman, a Democrat from Dillingham who caucuses with the House majority. Representative Edgman, good morning, and thanks for making the time, as always.
Well, it's my pleasure, Dave. Good morning from sunny Juneau for a change.
Sunny Juneau. It's going to be a windy one here. We you no doubt heard we did finally get some snow last week.
Yes, and that's I wish I was back home to enjoy it. We don't have a stitch of snow here in Juneau, but none the worse for wear, because most of us here in the capital east are spending long hours inside the building and, you know, wouldn't have any time to enjoy it if we had an opportunity.
Well, we've already been listening in on some hearings that started at 7:30 this morning here at our office. And so let's remind listeners that this time is certainly set aside for their questions, not mine, if you've got them. 842-1670 is the open line number locally. 1-800-478-KDLG is the long-distance number, or you can send me an email at news@kdlg.org. Bryce, if you don't mind, bring us up to speed. What's happening this week for you in the state's capital?
Well, in the House, we're making significant progress towards bringing our operating budget, the full budget itself, to the House Finance Committee. We have what are called budget subcommittees for each state agency, and those subcommittees are closing out their work and then preparing to present their budgets to the full Finance Committee, which will start taking place probably next week. And I guess on that subject, I don't have exact times yet, but we will be having days set aside for public testimony. So we're making progress, and as we have discussed throughout this radio show, and I'm sure we're going to keep talking about, this is not an ordinary year, so there's other bigger picture items in the mix as well. But on the budget itself, we're coming along pretty much as expected.
I think we heard Senator Pete Kelly say yesterday during a press conference that he expects the House to have its version of the budget put together, oh, maybe in the next 2 weeks. Does that sound about right?
That's about right. We're taking significant steps as we speak, and so whether it's 2 weeks or, you know, really, again, an environment that's so unpredictable down here, perhaps longer, who knows, but we are making significant strides, and I would say to have everyone stay tuned, in particular for next week's actions.
All right. We've got Jimmy Hurley from Equoc on the line with us this morning with a question about Board of Fish. Jimmy, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning, Bryce. Yeah, I saw that we don't have, Bristol Bay doesn't have a representative on Board of Fish. Can you pull the governor's ear and, you know, tell him we need, you know, our outsource of the salmon come from Bristol Bay. We got to have some say in what we're kind of messed up with the price, and, you know, that's bad enough, but if we don't have nobody sitting on our interests of what we need, the numbers and the harvest in Bristol Bay, and, you know, we have enough trouble with outsource of permits, you know, that, and, you know, we have $1 billion that leaves, I added all this up, and we have $1 billion that goes yearly, that goes to Seattle-based corporations, you know, fish corporations down there, so it's so sad that we can't garner or get some of that money, you know. We're the ones that have the voice in preservation. We suffer, you know, when there's closures of kings or, you know, moose season closes up too early or whatever, you know, we're the ones that, you know, people down in Seattle, that they go back to a job or whatever else. So, you know, that's where I think it's your job to, you know, stress to the governor and some of the other representatives, we need to turn this around I know you worked for BBDC a while back. You know, we need to get the price back up, you know, of salmon, you know. So that makes sense.
Go ahead, Bryce.
Well, good morning, Jimmy, and I really appreciate the question and some very astute observations as well. I agree with everything you've said, and just to sort of backtrack a little bit on the issue, I did meet with the governor, his chief of staff, and others on his team, because we found out about essentially the Bristol Bay seat going away right at the last moment. We didn't have the time to react and to sort of counter with another proposal. Why the governor made that move, I still don't fully understand it, but we do have a commitment from his administration and from others in the Capitol next year, and perhaps, you know, if it goes even beyond that, to work to get a Bristol Bay representative back on the Board of Fisheries. This is the first time in the history of the board, to my knowledge, that there isn't a Bristol Bay representative on the board. It's not something to take lightly. And, you know, if there's any opportunity with the three names that the governor has put forward at this point, if there's any opportunity that one of them should bow out or perhaps not be confirmed, we are prepared to be on it immediately. So, again, I'll bid you a good morning. Thank you for your comments. And your observation, I think, are right on the target.
Jimmy, thanks so much for the call from Equawk this morning.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Phone lines are open, 842-1670 or 1-800-478-KDLG. A question by email coming in, Bryce, that along those same lines, says, what would it take to bring foreign processors into Bristol Bay since the current canneries cannot handle the large runs of sockeye that we've seen over the past couple of years? That's something that's certainly come up quite a bit. Is there any progress or any momentum to the idea of asking the governor to allow that, or have you heard of any interest from any foreign processors that they'd like to come back to the Bay?
I've not heard any interest from foreign processors wanting to come into Bristol Bay. I'm not aware of any formal, any outreach to the governor or to the Department of Commerce, Commissioner Laddick, on that subject. This is, you know, an item that comes up somewhat regularly and then it goes away. But there is a formal application process. It would not be easy to get a foreign processor into Bristol Bay. There's a lot of steps involved. And I would, you know, ask the emailer if they want more information to contact my office, and we'll be happy to walk them through the various steps that are involved and get them more information. And perhaps give them the, you know, insight they need to put a request in.
Well, it does seem to me like I've heard about the issue quite a bit, and yet I've not seen anybody take the initiative to get that ball rolling if they want it. We hear about it in the summertime, but I don't see a lot of initiative in the spring. But I'm not a permit holder, so that's for them to worry about as it is. Phone lines are open, folks. Representative Bryce Edgman with us for about the next 20 minutes here on KDLG. Bryce, there's quite a few proposals now on how we're going to pay for this state budget this year. And it's moving kind of quick, and they're taking testimony on each of them each week and such. What are you seeing so far? How is it shaping up? It looks like there's some agreement that some amount of either the earnings or permanent fund is going to be used at some point to pay for Alaska's government.
Well, if you look at the fiscal strategy in the long term, it seems inevitable that we have to redirect or to use some of the permanent fund earnings to replace the huge drop in oil revenues. That almost seems like it's the one solution we have to be able to craft a stable and reliable revenue source, and then thereafter have budgets that are predictable and provide ample amount of funding for our schools and public safety and so forth. Where we're at in the legislature in terms of, and I'm going to use the word endowment plan, where we are in terms of creating an endowment plan that would use the earnings from the permanent fund, I would say we're very much in the formative stages. On one hand, it's not a very difficult issue, but on the other hand, when you look at the various alternatives that are out there, and then you know, the political consequences of doing anything with a permanent fund dividend, nobody's taking that lightly. So we're at the early stages, Dave, and I'd be open, and I would certainly welcome any phone calls from any callers that might be out there on the subject, because it is a very important topic that's underway down here.
Well, I will say that we haven't had a lot of calls in the past month or so on this program, and we've also noticed not a lot of people showing up at the LIO when there's opportunities to testify. So I don't know if that means that people aren't concerned about it or they're just not ready to voice their opinions about it. Let's see, phone lines are ringing now. Let's go right to the phone call here. Good morning. You're on the show with Bryce Edgman.
Good morning, Bryce. This is Stan Small.
Good morning, Stan.
I thought you might enjoy this day. We have all these people talking about taking the permanent fund and giving it to the government so that they don't have to pay any taxes. At the same time, I stand here and look out my window. I see the poor people walk by. I see the rich people drive by. And you say they should both pay the same taxes. I mean, I see the children that aren't getting taken care of in the schools for lack of money. They ain't got heat and oil. The villages are all down to maybe 10% of the workload in the state, if they're even that much. And you want them to pay the same taxes as someone who's making $100,000. The only thing that will work is to turn around and instate the personal income tax for the state, just like it does in every other state in the union, and put the oil money back into the permanent fund so that the people who get the money can spend the money where it should be spent. That's my opinion.
Well, Dan, I appreciate those comments, and I will tell you this, that if I had my way, we would do very much like you are suggesting. We would take the dividend, and we would keep it intact, and we would look to broad-based taxes, primarily a state income tax, to get more revenue, not only from Alaska residents, but also from non-residents. The tricky part in all that is that we have a legislature, by and large, that's very averse to doing anything with taxes, period. And as best I'm hearing, there's virtually no support anywhere for an income tax bill, at least during this session. And I want to be very clear here when we talk about the permanent fund dividend that I'm doing everything I can to keep it intact. But that said, I also want to be very frank with people. When you look at the longer-term picture, you know, when you got oil revenue that's now only supporting 20% of the cost of state government, and part of that, you know, those services are, as you suggest, kids in school and other core services, we have to make the difference up somewhere. And it's a very involved subject. I'm not saying anybody down here is ready to push any buttons and make any decisions, and I appreciate your input, and again, really want everybody else to focus on the subject and to provide their thoughts as well.
Stan, do you have a follow-up there?
Okay, well, thank you very much. I just noticed that the whenever it comes to taxing, they say nobody wants taxes. Whenever it comes to the permanent fund, they say, well, we're going to take it from you. Why don't they let us vote on it? I mean, the people could say whether they want them to take their permanent fund or not. We're not all, you know, anti-taking. We're just anti-having one little guy pay for the big bill, and the big guy put the money in their pocket and go to the lower 48 and say goodbye, guys. I mean, that's where 75% of the money made goes. I'm gone.
Hey, thanks very much, Stan. Always a refreshing perspective from Stan Small. We appreciate those phone calls. 842-1670 or 1-800-478-KDLG. We've got about 15 minutes left if you'd like to get your comments here on the air. If you've got some questions for Representative Edgman as he's joining us. Bryce, something that we saw pop up yesterday, looked like yesterday was the deadline to file any more, to introduce any more legislation. And we saw something from Senator Mike Dunleavy that looked like a fisheries royalty tax of 12.5% proposal. Where did that come from?
Well, we just learned about it yesterday as well. I was just out in the hallway talking with Representative Louise Stutes, who chairs the House Fisheries Committee, about it. She just learned of it as well. But it looks like it's mirrored after the royalty tax or the royalty that oil companies pay for extracting oil out of the ground up in the North Slope. It's a 12.5% fisheries royalty, which would be a whole new concept, and it's based on seafood that's caught commercially in the state. So it's aimed at commercial fishermen. There's no sports fishing component on it. And I would say at this point that this is more of a statement bill, I would assume. And I'll tell you this, if it gets over to the House, I'm going to do everything I can to oppose it. And it's just, again, reflective of the different crosswinds that are going right and left and the various creative measures that are coming forward to combat a huge deficit with limited amount of savings.
Certainly some crosswinds blowing. We've been keeping an eye on, mostly watching gavel to gavel, frankly, from here, from our office, to see what's happening down there. But one thing that has certainly stood out in the past week and a half has been the emphasis on cuts that are coming. And we heard that in the press conference yesterday from the Senate majority with Senator Pete Kelly, who co-chairs the finance. They're a very powerful position that he holds in the Senate. He was very clear that some serious cuts are coming and that everything is on the table. What do you see in the near future that people may want to comment on and let the lawmakers know the importance of various programs, university, education, health and social services, what else?
Well, there will be budget reductions in virtually every state agency. There will be some budget reductions to the university system. There may very well be budget reductions to the K-12 Education Foundation formula. And, of course, looking at the capital budget, which comes together later in session, that, of course, is going to be a lot smaller. So, again, we haven't seen the final pieces of the operating budget in either the House or the Senate. It's not the first time I've heard Senator Kelly talk about deep budget cuts. What I can say is that there are a lot of other legislators like myself who have been on the Finance Committee for a number of years and realize that, number one, we can't cut our way to a sustainable budget. And number two, in some ways, if we continue to cut deeper into agency budgets, we're cutting to eliminate entirely programs and services. So my approach is to look at this very carefully and not only consider the elimination of the services and what it means to our smaller communities, but as well, I think we need to, here in the legislature, take a deep breath, stand back, and also look at the economy of the state as a whole and to measure what these cuts are going to, what impacts they're going to engender. And so I think there's a lot of conversations going on, and in the end, we're going to meet somewhere in the middle on all this.
They mentioned that the slice of Alaska's operating budget that funds the agencies and personnel and day-to-day jobs and the rest is, what is that, about a third, about a fourth of the total budget? And somebody mentioned in that press conference yesterday that if they shut down every agency, let every employee from the governor's office on down go, we would still be $2.5 to $3 billion deficit this year.
Yeah, you're looking at if you were to shut down all 14 of the state agencies, the court system, and the university system, you would have reduced the budget by about 40%. So you still have 60% on the books.
And that's mostly driven by what, Bryce?
What did say that again?
The majority of state spending is mostly driven by what?
Well, if you looked at the bigger drivers in the budget, you're looking at the K-12 formula. At $1.2 billion, you're looking at the health and social services at about $2 billion plus. A lot of that's a big chunk of that is Medicaid. And then you're looking at another big bucket of combination of oil tax credits, debt service measures, and our retirement obligations.
Could the Medicaid reforms proposed by, I believe it is Senator Pete Kelly is the sponsor on that bill, will that, if it passes, will that create some savings in regards to that chunk of spending?
Well, you know, I'm very interested in seeing the bill that is being worked on by the Senate, the subcommittee of the Senate Finance Committee. I'm very interested in seeing that bill when it gets to the House Finance Committee, because Medicaid reform is something that clearly everybody acknowledges we need to commit to. But as well, it's a process that occurs over time. So it'll be interesting to see what the savings will be from it and what measures are going to be put in place because, again, it's going to take a few years to really realize significant savings as I know the subject.
All right. We've got about 8 minutes left, 842-1670, 1-800-478-KDLG. The phone line's actually now just jumping up. Let's jump right in here. Good morning. You're on the line with Representative Bryce Edgman.
Hi, Dave and Bryce. This is John Corbett. I was calling. I'm going to throw my question out and get off the line. But I was calling to wonder what Bryce's impressions are for the United for Liberty budget proposals that he was somewhat briefed on last week. You know, what do you think about that? Because I just heard you say that we can't cut our way to a sustainable budget. And then you answered the last question about where is all this money going to with not quite the answer. So I just want to hear what you had to say about that and what your general impressions are about the 2017 budget proposals that we threw out there. Thank you.
John, thanks very much for that call. We've got Billy Maines on hold. So, Bryce, if you'd like to fire away John's United for Liberty proposal, if you're familiar with it.
Yeah, first off, thanks for the question, John. I was not briefed on the budget. I did get their packet of information. I can speak, I guess, more factually to the two agencies that I, whose budgets I chair. Just looking at the Department of Corrections, for example, I thought that the information that was presented, most of it was not factual. There were nine items, one which definitely was on target, and we did incorporate into our budget discussions. The other eight, I thought it was interesting. We cross-checked with the department, and a lot of the information was not on target. Some of the recommendations, for example, were to, you know, cut the administrative services for the department in half, cut prisoner transport in half, do a number of things that clearly would cripple the department. And so I didn't understand where that came from. If you have additional thoughts, more information, please call me, 1-800-898-4451, because, you know, as I said earlier, all agency budgets are going to be reduced to some level, and you know, all input is welcomed.
All right, let's go to Billy Maines now in Dillingham. Billy, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Bryce. How are you?
I'm doing well, Billy. Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I know in the years past and different sessions and stuff like that, when they're looking at trying to generate revenue, the state lottery always came up, and I was wondering if it came up again this year, and if it was actually considered, only for the fact that, you know, there's that Powerball situation where it was like $1.6 billion, and I had to call up a friend down in Washington to go and buy me a couple tickets because I wasn't able to do it here in Alaska. And it finds out there's only a handful of states that aren't part of that Powerball system. And if you're a part of that Powerball system, each one of the states got X amount of millions of dollars for just being a part of it, as well as whoever's selling the winning ticket gets $1 million. So, you know, with that money just floating around out there, I'm trying to figure out why the state of Alaska doesn't have its own state lottery, because I know there's folks that have pushed for it in the years past, and maybe this is a time to seriously consider it and look at taking, to me, is actually free money. It's just like, you know, with people's choices. If they want to smoke, well, they have to go and pay the extra money to buy a pack of cigarettes. If they want to have a drink, well, they have to pay the extra money to have a drink, you know. And then we're also looking at marijuana and taxation on that. You know, why not continue to feed the evil and think about the gambling and the proceeds that can come from that, because that's what people choose to do.
All right, Billy, thanks so much. Bryce, if you want to answer that quickly, we've got another call to get to before we wrap up here. Thanks, Billy.
Yes, thanks, Billy. The point, historically there's been opposition to that in the legislature, but if there's ever an environment to look at something like that, it is now. And I think I mentioned this on a previous radio show, that former mayor, Anchorage Mayor Dan Coffey, was down touting the concept here in the Capitol. And so I would say stay tuned on that issue. I think it's going to come up again.
All right. I'm guessing Billy didn't win that Powerball. He'd be calling us from Kauai this morning and not from across the street. Let's go quickly to Kurt Armstrong. Kurt, we've got just about 2 minutes left. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Hey, good morning, Bryce. I've got a little smaller issue. I think at our advisory committee meeting the other day, I guess it was the first time I had learned again that the department has gone backward, the game department, has gone backward to trying to utilize the cost recovery program, and I thought we had put that sort of to bed a while back, and it seems that last year when they did it, they got about 10 cents a pound for our high quality red salmon, which doesn't seem to be a very effective, efficient way to do business. And so I just thought I'd alert you, in case you weren't aware, that was happening again.
Kurt, thanks so much for that call. Bryce, go ahead. We got about 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, thank you for pointing that forward, Kurt. Very interesting with the Department of Fish and Game budget. I wouldn't say it's desperate times down here, but we're seeing things come forward in the budgets that we've not seen come forward in a long time. But in the department's budget itself, we're seeing a lot of cost recovery proposals from fisheries around the state, which I think we're going to hear a lot of the pro and cons to that when we get to the full finance committee. I would as well point out that the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission is essentially being dismantled and reorganized within the department itself, and that's supposed to produce a cost saving of about $1.3 million, which will in turn be, we hope anyway, be directed towards the commercial fisheries part of the department. But you bring up a good point, and it's something for us to keep a close eye on.
Well, let's probably leave it right there for now. I want to thank all the callers and emails this morning for helping us keep this engaging dialogue. Especially thank our guest, Representative Bryce Edgman. Always appreciate your time from there on this program, Bryce.
Dave, it's been my pleasure, and thank everyone for calling in, and I hope we have the same number of callers in a couple of weeks when we talk next.
We'll see you back here in 2 weeks. Thanks so much, Bryce. I'm Dave Benninger, and we'll send it now back to Hannah in the studio.